Welcome back to the Agile for Life podcast. Thank you for once again tuning in to hear Mariah and I talk about becoming more agile in everything that you do. Our goal is to present a series of conversations about transforming our lives, both at work and at home. Today on the podcast, we interview a special guest, Bernard Williams of Cisco Systems, to talk about agile at scale. It's one thing to be agile in the small things, but what about when you need to tackle the big stuff? With that, let's get into our conversation with Bernard. So why don't we start off with a brief introduction. Bernard, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and also your relationship with Agile?
Sure. My name is Bernard Williams. I'm a senior program manager with Cisco, and I have been engaged in using Agile to deploy enterprise systems across numerous organizations, large and small, Fortune 100 companies for the past, I'd say, 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, Cisco, pretty big company. I can only imagine that the ability to take Agile and ramp it up to operate at enterprise scale is something that they would be particularly interested in, right?
Absolutely. In fact, I was pleased to see that Cisco is actually a case study on the Scaled Agile Framework site from a project several years ago. So
you ought to claim ownership for that. You ought to be like, yeah, thanks, Cisco. You know, you're welcome. You're welcome, Cisco.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Well, Moana.
Moana. Oh, don't get us singing. We were doing the ABC song before we started recording. So if we can't handle the ABC song, we are not going to be able to handle Moana.
Okay, that was so. Me that couldn't handle the ABCs.
All right, fair enough. Well, I wasn't calling you out.
What's happening here?
Yeah. Well, you guys connected because both of you went to this training class on SAFe, Scaled Agile Framework, and I'd love to get a little bit of an understanding about what you saw when you went into that. What expectations did you have when you went into that training session? What did you learn? Did it straighten things out? Mariah, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, sure. So when I went, it was really just to get an understanding of what people meant when they said SAFe. You know, to me, it was everyone kept saying, you know, we're moving to SAFe or we want to move to SAFe. And I'm like, I don't even know what this is. Am I SAFe? Did I have to go to HR? Like, I have no idea what this even means.
Right. You are right.
Yeah. Am I SAFe enough? So yeah, when I first went, it was just to kind of figure out what is this? What is everyone talking about? And going was really beneficial for me. I don't know, Bernard, if you felt the same way, but for me, it was like all of the things I was trying to figure out for the large organization that Aaron, that you and I work for, how can they scale agile, right? Like not to steal the words from the meaning of SAFe, but how do we scale agile for a large organization and especially one such as ours where we do have the lean governance? And so pulling in those concepts was really beneficial for me because I was really trying to rack my brain, like, how do I do this? What do I do? And now I feel like I have the tools that I was looking for. That I don't have to like beat my head against the wall because it's already been built.
So let's define something there for our listeners who may not be familiar with it. You just referenced lean governance. What is lean governance and how does that apply to what we do?
Yeah. So for us in our organization, we have a group of individuals that really push the funding for different projects. And so we have a review board, a whole group of people that are reviewing these projects at a large scale and kind of do that cost benefit analysis. Like, is this the benefit that will help our company at large? Right.
Right. Right.
If so, they provide the funding that we need to ensure that we can complete whatever that project is.
Yeah. And if anybody's not familiar with lean outside the concept of like lean protein from chicken, it comes from this background. All these different streams are kind of coming together. So you have the Six Sigma, you know, and if you ever watch 30 Rock on TV, they're all, you know, green belt, black belt, trying to figure all those things, you know, out. But the lean principles are basically just removing as much inefficiency and waste from our overall process. And we can do that in our personal lives. We can do that professionally. And so lean kind of comes together with the Kanban concepts, with the Agile concepts. And now on some level, we're wrapping it all all together at this scaled agile with this enterprise approach to doing this work. Bernard, let me get your initial thoughts about when you were going into that training class for, say, for scaled agile. What kind of expectations did you have? How familiar were you with it before you went into the class? And when you went through it, did it straighten anything out that you maybe weren't thinking about it the way that they taught it in the class?
Right. So I was actually a SAFe Agilist. We went, like I said, Cisco has a commitment to being agile. And by the way, my opinions are my own. We focused on the Scaled Agile framework as a destination for our program managers and leaders within our services organization. The project managers and program managers all went through agile training. And so I had gone through the SAFe Agilist training last year. And I had a general understanding, obviously, after completing that training of what the Scaled Agile framework was all about, and loved it because it really brought everything together that I had been seeing as a practitioner in the field for the past 25 years of all the different things that I could have done wrong, that I did do wrong. There is a checklist for it in the Scaled Agile framework. And they're like, don't do this. And I'm like, I've done that. I know why they're saying don't do that. And
so it's let me ask you that. So you say 25 years. I've been around in IT for roughly that same period of time. Agile just officially celebrated its 20-year anniversary this year. So we both go back before the time where there was a thing that was officially called Agile. When you dinosaurs. Look back, thank you. Yes, thank you so much. Yeah. Right. Moving on. When you look back over that 25 period, your period of time, and you think about the way that things used to be and the way that things are now, what are some of the things that you've seen evolve pre and post agile, pre and post SAFe?
I think what I've seen just in tying it into agile, what I've seen is a pivot in leadership thinking and an expectation from teams for their leaders to actually not be top-down autocratic leaders. That's not popular anymore. Right. When I first started, it was, my manager came into my office and said, "What have you done for me lately?" He says, "I know I don't look like Janet Jackson, but," and I had to keep a list of stuff on the whiteboard to talk to him about, what I have done for him, what I had done for him lately. And he was serious. So that doesn't fly anymore. That's not okay. And it doesn't work. And So what I've seen over the past 25 years is that pivot in thinking and the pivot in expectation from just the change in the folks that are coming up today versus the folks that came up when I came up. It there's different expectations for leadership, and it's the time for agile as a result of that. And because of that, and due to that, all of the above has caused a nexus in thought and in action. And so The biggest change I would say is the expectations on leadership.
No, that's great. And I think that tees up another question really well. Mariah, let me kick this one over to you.
Sure.
So, Bernard's saying historically there's been a more general approach, which has been more autocratic, more top down. Definitely. Not that that's completely gone. We certainly have, more of that in the workforce than we probably want.
Yeah.
But the bottom up, the grassroots, agile definitely thrives, at that level. But here we are talking about scale, right? About enterprise. And so what are your thoughts about how scaled agile, about how SAFe brings together the leadership from a top-down perspective and the teams from a bottom-up grassroots perspective?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think the thing that I love most about scaled agile is the concept of they're called ARTs, agile release trains. Mm-hmm. And these agile release trains are just groups of people that all work together to build some sort of value for the company, for the organization. Mm-hmm. And these value streams is what they call them, are made up of all the different silos, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not that Scaled Agile removes the silos and strategically reorganizes the whole entire company into these, you know, I know, Aaron, we've heard these terms like fusion teams or product mm-hmm. teams or, you know, vertical alignments, whatever you want to call them, right? It's not doing that. Like right. the teams are still the same. They're still in their silos. But what it does is it pulls you together for your common value that you're building upon. Mm-hmm. And so in doing that, it brings everyone together for their common interests, right? So you're talking about the people on the IT side who are provisioning the VMs, or maybe there's some large acquisition. And so the people who are needed to purchase the computers are in those very beginning conversations mm-hmm. from the get-go rather than last minute, you know?
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that release train concept. Bernard, with the teams that you're working with, are they using the release trains and the release train engineers today?
It depends on the scope and size of the engagement. And so an engagement that I just came off of, I was the release train engineer for it. So it was a larger project, about $250 million. And so there mm-hmm. is a lot of moving parts. And in the piece that I was in, you know, I was the release train engineer for it. And then there's other engagements that smaller you just have an agile team.
I think you have managed to put your finger on the button of scale. You just said the magic $250 million term. So it's clear when you're dealing with projects that have financing at that kind of scale, that there's going to be a level of complexity that can't be dealt with in a very individualistic or even single team kind of mindset. So good that you were the release train engineer. That makes you a perfect person for us to be talking to today. Yeah. Think about the tactical aspect. Can you describe, we have these terms, release train engineer, and people are like, what? You know, what does that person do? What did you do in that role? How did you help facilitate a project of that size as this so-called release train engineer?
Right. And so the Scaled Agile framework introduces a multi-tiered approach to this. And so you have the team level, and you have a product owner and a scrum master that own the backlog and work from left to right through their iterations. And then on the release train level, the art, you have a release train engineer, and that's a collection of teams, and generally around 150 people or less. And that team of folks goes and has regularly scheduled releases. And so the meetings are scrum of scrum meetings. We facilitate and help set up the PI planning. So the mm-hmm. program increment planning sessions and, you know, this iterative cycle, the release train engineer is driving and just as the scrum master might do at a team level, the mm-hmm. release train engineer is doing at that release train level. And then above mm-hmm. that, you have a solution train engineer, which may be a collection of release trains. And then mm-hmm. above that, you have the strategic themes of the organization that the solutions bubble up into and are driven by. The one thing I want to point out, you know, the engagement that I was on, $250 million, my piece wasn't $250 million.
Right.
I'd probably mm-hmm. be sitting here. But the the section that we had, I was the release train engineer for that. And it was enjoyable. And our project was probably had about 60, 70 people, mm-hmm. Wrapped into it. And five different value streams. And we came together on a regular cadence. So we developed on cadence and we released mm-hmm. on demand. And just like they prescribe in the Scaled Agile framework. And so I would equate the role of a release train engineer to the scrum master for a collection of agile teams.
No, that makes sense. And let's probe this a little bit further from both of your perspectives, because, you know, Bernard, you've been working this in a somewhat established environment where there's teams that are already doing this and have been doing it for a little while. And Mariah, you're helping to lead some of the transformation to bring mm-hmm. us to this. So, you know, what I want to get into is, Bernard, from your perspective as a release train engineer, what didn't work and what did work? And then Mariah, you know, from the perspective of we're just getting going. So how do we start to transform or move to this particular practice? So Mariah, start with you. Like, how do you go from vanilla agile? So the teams are just basically starting to understand the agile concepts and the cylinders are starting to fire to now, okay, we need to start adding a layer or even two layers on top of that.
Yeah. I mean, the great thing again about SAFe is that, you know, whenever we took the implementing SAFe portion of this training, is there's actually a roadmap that's already created. So it's really nice that I can just step into that and feel comfortable knowing that the first two, like, steps, I would say, is, you know, first you want to train your change agents, whoever those change agents are, identify those people and get them training. And then the next step to that is making sure that your leaders are trained in, you know, leading SAFe and what that looks like and how that changes and where we're headed, right? And knowing that we, you know, us at our organization, we're kind of laying this like base agile, you know, vanilla framework. That's the first step, I would say. But next, we really need to start getting some more training for the folks that are going to be involved in this.
Mm-hmm. And so back to you, Bernard, from your experiences in working with the different teams, what didn't work? What are some of the pain points as teams begin to scale up like this?
I would say that, you know, the first piece to that question to me is the realization that projects are a social construct. You know, just like mm-hmm. a party isn't a party until somebody shows up, and so it is mm-hmm. constructed of interactions and individuals. And so mm-hmm. projects are the same thing; they're a social construct. And so most of the things that go wrong on projects are because of how people think and cognitive issues that we have with each other and our interactions with each other, rather. And so I would say this, it's so true. When I started off on this engagement, there were assumptions that we made across the team about the levels of exposure that the team had to agile training, their willingness to perform in an agile team, their willingness to meet the customer at where the customer wanted to be from an agile management perspective. And we just thought that everybody wanted to do the best they could. And sometimes, mm-hmm. yep, that's not the case. You know, mm-hmm. we have an aspirational goal to be able to work together effectively. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And so as a release train engineer, I own the responsibility of what I like to say, inspecting the tracks, getting out there and actually looking to make sure that when this train's going down the tracks, it's not going to fall off or derail, and just being have a healthy sense of paranoia and being proactive to get out there and surface problems that are beneath the surface and not visible.
Is it fair to say that in that release train engineer role that you are a facilitator, that you are an organizer, in some cases you may be even a mediator between the different things that are happening at the team level?
Yes, that. And I also think that, you know, on the old, I almost said choo-choo train, but the old steam locomotives, right. They had that piece on the front that moved animals off of the
cow catcher.
Yeah, I feel that that's a key role of the release train engineer as well.
So you're removing blockades, but at a little bit higher level than maybe the Scrum Master is doing it at the team level.
Yep.
That's interesting. Mariah, you know, we started off talking about the old school autocratic top-down leadership. Mm-hmm. We've kind of gone quickly to talking about the things that need to happen at the team and even at that next level up in terms of bringing the multiple teams together and making sure that they're collaborating and coordinating and all of that. But what do you think needs to change from a leadership perspective to make this work?
I think the one thing that we as people, and especially, you know, leaders, that we tend to do is we go back to our old ways because it's comfortable and it feels SAFe, not like SAFe, scaled agile framework, but like SAFe because it's something that we're comfortable in. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, getting the education around what this actually looks like and could look like. But seeing it tactically, you know what I mean? Because I know a few people that at our organization have taken trainings. Mm-hmm. And trainings is sometimes not enough. it's actually practicing it and seeing it. So I think, you know, doing the small things that we can to, you know, maybe pull a few teams together and mm-hmm. show leadership what this looks like. As even just a trial run, like, you know, right. I know you and I are all about proof of concept, right? Mm-hmm. I think you and I have always been the people who say like, okay, we'll build up a proof of concept so that way people can see it.
Right.
I think doing something like that would be really beneficial so that way leaders can see like, okay, so I learned this mm-hmm. and this is what that looks like. This is how this could change. And this is why this is beneficial. Mm-hmm. What was it, Bernard, in our SAFE class? I can't remember. It was like the John Cotter had a bunch of different things outlined. And I want to say it was like, number one was like, what was it?
Creating a sense of urgency.
Yes. Yes. Creating a sense of urgency. Yes, exactly. And so thank you. See, so, you know, I think for us, creating that sense of urgency and painting that picture of why it's important for us to make this change, is really where we'll find our successes.
I think there was a both and though in what you just said. There is creating a sense of urgency, but also let's not go out and build all of the infrastructure, superstructure, yeah. scaffolding so that we're going to change everything in one right. moment. Right. We're going to start with
it's evolution, not revolution.
Yeah. 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 No, absolutely. That's a great way of putting it because if you try to do that, well, like, let's just send everybody in the company to training and then just right. assume that it's going to work or whatever. Or even if you built out all of those scaffolding type teams, the release train mm-hmm. engineers and everything else, and then just said, okay, everybody, we have all of this. Now go do PI planning
do
or
yeah.
whatever. Yeah. Probably not going to get a whole lot of success, right?
That's one of the right. things that Scaled Agile talks about is the dual operating mm-hmm. system. You know, this transition into when Lean first came out and Motorola, you know, I used to work at Motorola and everybody had to go to Six Sigma training and it was all mm-hmm. about creating value streams. But what we didn't do was organize the company around value. And that's one of the things that, you know, SAFE talks about is, you know, you're going to have your hierarchical structure inside of the organization, but you really need to create this second operating system that organizes around value so that you are delivering in that model. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, those legacy, I'll call them legacy models, they didn't accommodate for that. And mm-hmm. doing the dual operating system allows large organizations to be able to transform quickly without just, you know, simply ripping out their proven methods of organizing their companies.
Let me ask you another question. I'm assuming that you probably covered this in the training class that you went to. Maybe I should have gone and gotten trained. Who knows?
It's not too late.
Thanks. I appreciate the invitation. Cisco's going to pay, right? Yeah. No, the thing that I hear about sometimes when he said no. Anyway, I hear about this sometimes with Scaled Agile. The critics will say, before you know it, we're just back to doing things the way that we've always done it. And we're just using different language, you know, to describe it. You know, there's that the additional framework can just become very waterfall-ish, even though we're trying to move away from that. So how do we prevent that from happening, right? We don't want to just do things the way that we've always done it with new terminology. How do we keep the agile, even though we are adding some additional layers of coordination and process to this overall thing? How do we keep it from becoming a whole lot less agile as we scale? Oh, Bernard, you can't see those of you who are just listening, but he's got his hand up in the air. It's like kindergarten all over again. I want to answer this one. All right, Bernard, so, dive in, man.
I really believe that it is the change in outcome, the change in expected outcomes that drives the change in behavior. If you don't change the paradigm or the what you are expecting to see at the end, you're not going to mm-hmm. have the organizational change and the cultural change that's going to be required. It's one thing to say, oh, I want to go and do XYZ activity. But we're not speaking of it in terms of outcomes. I want to have a healthier life. I want to, you know, have healthier relationships. Instead, we talk about, I want to go to the gym and work out. And so we end up going to Sonic and, you know, trying to be on a diet.
Well, what happened there? You were making a left at the gym and you just made a right at Sonic. Well, first of all, nice way to get that dig into me. But anyway, how would you go right instead of left?
The point being is that we have to change our expectations of the outcome. And so imagine you're an organization, whether you're 5 or 5,000 people, and you embark on an agile journey to transform from being, you know, I'll say legacy company to, you know, company 2.0. Yeah, you can slap on all the agile processes. You can go to the gym and work out. You can eat healthier. But until you change what you're expecting to have as the end result, then you're just going to continue, you know, adopting bad practices and not changing the culture. Processes and tools are cool, but culture is king.
That's great. I think that,
I like that. It's a bumper sticker.
Oh, yeah. Join the club. We got bumper sticker wisdom all over the place here. That tees things up well. Mariah, I wonder what you think about this. Based on what, you know, Bernard just said, it kind of brings me back to the whole value stream concept, the value that we talked about earlier on. What is the difference between producing value and just doing more work?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, it's kind of like Bernard was saying, you know, it's where your focus resides. You know, if mm-hmm. we're talking about, I mean, I, you know, now Bernard's got my head at the gym. So, you know, for me, I mean, I like going to the gym. I like exercising. And when my focus was, yeah, and I like Sonic. But when my focus was, you know, solely on, you know, going to the gym and, you know, losing weight or whatever, I wasn't setting these incremental goals to where I could actually see the value in which I was producing, you know? Mm-hmm. So now my focus has changed to gaining strength. And mm-hmm. so when I focus on gaining strength, I can measure that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's being able to measure the value that you want to see. Right. So if my value is I'm gaining strength, well, how do I measure that? Well, I know that I was, you know, able to, you know, do a military press of 25 pounds dumbbells on each arm, you know, when I first started, and now I can do 45.
Right. Yeah, that's good. I think it's a good illustration, because if you just check the boxes, I wanted to go to the gym 5 days this week, and maybe even I wanted to do 500 reps of these different exercises, these different weightlifting things. That's one thing. That's work. You know, I did this thing, check, 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 check. But if the value is I want to be stronger, and you're going 5 days a week and you're doing 500 reps and you're not getting any stronger, then you're not getting any value out of it. You're just doing work. And I think that's maybe an important distinction for us to think about. Let me ask you another thing. So I'm going to throw you all a curveball.
Uh-oh.
I know. Wah, wah, wah. Well, we work at some pretty big companies. We understand scaled agile in the context of trying to bring together lots of teams across a bigger organization to do bigger projects at scale. But what are some of the principles that we might be able to take away from this, the scaled aspect of it, in our own personal lives? Would that we all had a release training engineer like Bernard running certain aspects of our lives, you know, that we had five teams of 30 people. We don't do that. But how can we think about scaling up our agile concepts in our personal lives, even though we don't have large numbers of people doing the work for us?
Well, I think for me, you know, I'm kind of at this like pivotal point, and honestly thank COVID for this, but I'm at a pivotal point where I'm really focused on retirement, and you know what it takes to get there, right? I was never focused on this before. I'm 35 years old. Like, I never cared. Yeah, I have a 401k. I've had one ever since I started working, but I never really like thought about, you know, investing and what it takes. And, you know, I know, Aaron, you know, and some of our listeners might know as well, that I was living in Seattle for a while. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot more expensive to live in Seattle than it is in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I made this change in my life, it was all around my future, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think of that in a way as, you know, scaling for my life, because I know that the large goal, the value is early retirement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no, then I all think of that's the good. Other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just say all the other things that it takes to get there, right? Like, it's not just about my 401k and it's not just about having a good job, but it's all those other streams of value mm-hmm. that I can bring into my life to help me get there faster.
I think that's great because, like I said, not that we're going to have these large teams of people that we have to manage or these large projects in the same way, but the finance thing that you just talked about, that's a value stream for your life. You're producing more value for yourself as you continue to get more and more financially independent. We've mm-hmm. touched on our own personal health, physical health.
Yeah.
That's another value stream. These things wind together, right? It, mm-hmm. it becomes less of a bunch of streams that are all sitting kind of side by side. It's more like a woven pattern, tapestry, whatever you want to visualize it as. So, and thinking about life as to, you know, how does the financial value stream in my life and the health value stream and the family value stream and the personal well-being value stream, all of those different things, you know, interconnect with each other so that mm-hmm. I'm not treating my life in silos, just like we don't want to treat our company in silos. That's good. That's good. Bernard, any final thoughts on that before we wrap up today?
I think the one, I really appreciate you guys letting me, come and wax.
Of course.
Poetically.
Absolutely.
So thank you for letting me be on the show. But the reason I am so passionate about this particular topic is that I believe that, you know, that this time, at this day and age, there are companies that are going out of business today that don't even know that they're going out of business. Mm-hmm. Nobody sent the dinosaurs an email and said, hey, you know, by the way, you're going to all be dead in the next 10 years because of the climate changes that have just occurred, you know, on the other side of the planet. Mm-hmm. And so there are pivotal changes that are occurring now that are wiping out fortunes, wiping out people's futures. And it's happening because, mm-hmm. you know, we are not thinking in today's terms. And today's language is the language of agile. It is being able to adapt, change, overcome in a world that is, you know, constantly changing in front of you. I think of those, all of those movies where, you know, somebody, whether it's Indiana Jones or Keanu Reeves or whoever the action hero
dating is, yourself again, but go ahead.
You know, is running across, you know, rocks that are floating on lava and, you know, mm-hmm. you know, he's trying to get to the other side or she's trying to get to the other side. And, you know, that's the world we're in and businesses are trying to survive and you can't come with, you know, 20-year-ago language, top down, autocratic mm-hmm. type leadership. It doesn't work. And mm-hmm. you are already out of business. You just don't know it yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't think we can do the same thing with our own personal lives either, because history has shown me at least that when I try to only deal with, you know, one siloed aspect of my life and I don't treat my life as the collective whole, that it pretty quickly falls apart because I push a little on the left and then things get out of whack on the right. And then I go over and push a little mm-hmm. bit on the right. And then I'm back to where I was before I went through this and a little bit disenchanted about the whole thing. So yeah, mm-hmm. there's some really good ideas. I think that come together. I'm surprised. I went into this thinking, oh, this is going to be a show really mostly dedicated to the corporate side of things, but I think we can learn a lot from this like always. So
absolutely.
Bernard, we want to thank you very much for coming on and talking with us today. I'm so glad that your paths crossed in that training class. It was really good. Yeah.
Can I give a shameless plug to those folks?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, so it was Enterprise Agility.consulting. Vikas and Michelle, thank you very much for the great instruction.
I don't know you, Vikas and Michelle, but thank you.
Yeah, they were great. Exactly.
That's awesome. Well, to all of our listeners today, we thank you very much for tuning into the show. We hope that we've given you some interesting things to think about, and we look forward to hosting another podcast again next week. So have a great week. Be agile in everything that you do. And just say goodbye.
Bye. Thank you, friends.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.